I didn't take it.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to today's House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. It is Wednesday, the 28th of May. I'm going to call the meeting to order. And we have an agenda with just two subjects, a lot of people to provide interesting testimony. I'm happy that you're all here. We're going to begin with an informational hearing on the CTE grant program, follow that up with one, also an informational hearing, on college credit for military training. So I would like to begin by opening an informational hearing on the CTE grant program and call up, please, John Mollis and Laura Roach. Both here? Yes. Excellent. Please introduce yourselves and everyone in the room, those of you up here and elsewhere, please make sure that your phones are at least silenced, perhaps off. Introduce yourselves and take us away.
Well, good morning, Chair Harker and members of the committee. My name is John Mollis. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Oregon State Building Trades Council, which is an umbrella organization for union construction workers. And I also sit on the CTE Revitalization Grant Advisory Committee, which oversees the grant process and awards. And we're happy to be here this morning to share an update with you as far as how this has progressed. This is the third iteration of funding. As you know, the legislature first funded this in 2011 and allocated $1.8 million to begin the restoration of CTE classes to middle and high schools in our state. In 2013, that amount was increased to $8.8 million. And just last spring in the 2014 session, the legislature allocated an additional $2 million to the program. In 2011, we were able to fund 8 programs serving 21 schools. In 2013, we were able to fund 24 grants serving 140 schools. And most recently, thanks to the most recent grant, we were able to fund 8 additional grants that will serve 28 schools. I've been on the advisory committee since the beginning. It's been a really interesting learning process for me. Probably one of the most difficult tasks has been to decide who gets the awards out of a lot of really good grant proposals that have been submitted literally from every corner of the state. I was also able to take a tour of one of the programs about a year ago in the Prineville High School. And it was really great to see the enthusiasm of the students and the instructor in the classroom, a classroom that was an old shop class, had sat empty for many, many years, and they finally moved the old junk cars out of it and the pallets of paper and got it going again, and it was really great to see. And they had worked with their industry partners in town, and one of the intentions of the program is to show long-term success, and we don't want to fund just one-year-off programs, and they had that in place. It's really heartening to me personally to see how far this has come in the last 5 years. Jobs in the building trades and in manufacturing and in traded sector industries pay more than average in this state. And not everybody's going to go to college, and that's okay. There's viable alternatives, and I think there's probably manufacturing jobs in this state that are going unfilled right now. And there's a lot of folks in these industries that are going to retire in the next 5 to 10 years. And I truly believe that these programs are going to help get students ready and go into the pipeline for these alternative careers that don't necessarily require a high school education, but require a different form of higher learning to prepare themselves for these alternative careers. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Laura Roach, and she can provide you with some more of the facts and figures and details. Thank you very much.
Yes, there's a question or a comment here.
Thank you. Do you want questions now? We're going to do.
I think we might as well. Go ahead.
Yeah. Please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, John, you're involved. Your committee decided on the grants?
Yes. Yeah. Chair Harker, Representative Wisnett, yes.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Did you look at longevity of the program? How long? You know, everyone up here has voted, and we're all in favor of this program. I'll talk to Mrs. Roach, too, about this. I toured Bend High School last year, and they have a whole wing of CTE that's never been opened or is closed now. Costs the taxpayers a lot of money to build that facility. So when you're making these grants, are you looking to be sure that this program, and also the job market changes tremendously. You know, we probably don't need to have CTE for a lot of some IT programs now because the market's flooded. So, you know, did your committee look at this to be sure that we're addressing the workforce needs of Oregon and planning for the future and costing that out as far as being sure that that, you know, would probably automotive mechanics, you know, now it's computerized automotive mechanics, not what we used to do when you took down a carburetor and things like that. So did you look at those things?
Chair Harker, Representative Wisden, I think in general the answer is yes. Definitely one of the judging criteria for the grants is to show how you've partnered with either businesses in your town or the Chamber of Commerce or one of our building trades apprenticeship programs that has a training center there or nearby that can show long-term ability to carry on the program. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, we don't want to just fund a pilot program for a year and have it go away. That's not success. And we try very hard as well to make sure that the programs that we fund are providing relevant training and that they're geographically dispersed around the state. When I was working on my remarks a bit last night, I thought it would be really interesting, since this has been around just for about 3 years now, to set up some sort of tracking system that helps us follow, well, what happened to the programs in Prineville and the other programs that we initially funded. Are they still going? And if so, that's great. And if not, why aren't they? And Laura could probably speak a little bit in more in detail to if that system has been set up yet. But I think that's important for us to do, because that's one of the criteria. We want,
yeah,
we want longevity and continuity.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else right now? Ms. Roach?
Okay. Good morning, Chair Harker and Vice Chair Huffman and Gillick. I'm not going to say this right, Gallegos. I have to confess I'm from the South, my accent's a little different every now and then. I just, and members of the committee, I wanted to thank you for allowing us to present to you this morning and bring you up to date on the good work that's being done by our field, our staff in the field. The grant has been, I think, a very important part of revitalizing CTE. We see a lot of excitement out there on behalf of school districts, on behalf of communities, and from students. When we received the additional funding in February, which was $2 million, we began to work from those applicants that had already been submitted. They had already been scored by the advisory committee and reviewed and ranked. We looked again at the distribution across the state so that we could be inclusive of rural areas as well. We did consider sustainability, although I will say to you, Representative Wisnett, that there are some challenges, and I think you would understand that high schools are not nearly as flexible in their programming and their teacher hiring and moving of teachers from place to place and the credentials. And so that's one piece of the flexibility. The other piece is when you have a business partner and you build your program around a business partner, there's no guarantee that that business partner will stay in place. So we do look at that, and we do ask for a sustainability plan. And I think for the most part, the recipients are very aware that we have high expectations of them to be successful and to support these programs. And so far, all those programs have been, to my knowledge, have been kept in place, with the exception of one that had some challenges, perhaps from the beginning, around their business partners. And they are still working, but not in the same capacity or in the same, quite the same arrangement. So it does require a very strong foundation of planning, of program design, and of building partnerships. And most of the programs that we funded already had a foundation in place, and they were renewing or rebuilding and extending. There were some that are new, but for the most part, it's pretty hard to write this grant. If you find out in February and submit a grant in July, chances are you're not unless you have a foundation in place, it's going to be hard to be ready because there are a lot of elements to the design. So I hope that gives you some confidence, no guarantees. I do understand about the BIN program and the fact that there are facilities out there that need to be leveraged and utilized. And so we are very thoughtful about that. Of the grantees that we have, I have to tell you they are super excited about the opportunity to reinvest in CTE and to have some new equipment to move on to a new and a better phase of programming. My team has visited all 24 of the grant recipients since July, that we awarded in July, and they come back enthusiastic and excited and just really hopeful that CTE can find its place back in the school system as it was in the past in terms of availability to students. Mm-hmm. We ask all of our programs to identify local and workforce needs. And so
Can you hold on for just 1 second? There's a question from Rep. Huffman here, or a comment. I'm not sure which.
Thank you, Chair Harker. You made a comment that got me to thinking about, we had also tried to do in February, looking to the future for having instructors in the pipeline. With these applications that came in, you had mentioned there were, like in Bend, there were a number of places around the state that have had facilities. Some of them are still equipped facilities, some of them from the days of industrial arts and shop classes. But what about instructors? Did a lot of the applications come in saying that they had teaching staff in place that was qualified and ready to head down this path for the new program, or did some of the applications say that they would be using some of the money to hire staff that was qualified?
Chair Harker and Vice Chair Huffman, some of both. In many cases, they already had an instructor or a line on an instructor. In some cases, they were moving instructors and training them to do additional work. And in some cases, they were potentially looking. One of the interesting grants that you might be intrigued with was out of Sherwood High School, where you have an instructor who has years of experience. And part of his grant was to purchase a trailer and use the equipment to travel around the state to train other instructors and students. And so that was his contribution, and the superintendent and principal allowing him the time to go and help other instructors learn how to do this work. So some of both. We still have, to be honest, an instructor issue in terms of the availability of instructors, particularly in rural areas. We are having, I think Representative Reardon is planning a conversation this summer about teacher licensure and endorsement processes and what we can do to help. So I think we're okay in the grants this year, but we do have to have this conversation around teacher endorsement and licensure to better support the teachers in the system. Year before last, we had like three teachers and so that needed endorsement or licensure, and that's not enough to set up a system.
Just to follow up,
yes.
Something maybe to consider for the future, if it wasn't a part of the review process, is the depth of talent within the district. Working with Rep. Reardon on the CTE caucus, he had made the comment that he was out ill or had broken a bone or something, and when he was teaching, he was out, and the replacement teacher for several weeks was somebody that was not qualified at all. And this was back when they had the industrial arts and shop, woodwork and whatnot. And he said it was a pretty scary situation for somebody that wasn't certified or qualified to come in and fill in for the class to oversee students doing things using machines that could take off fingers and whatnot.
Absolutely.
Chair Harker, Representative Hoffman, if I may, we've had conversations within the building trades about how could we have some of our instructors possibly qualify to teach some of these CTE classes. I taught a few apprenticeship classes years ago. It wasn't for me. I didn't have the patience. But we have a lot of really skilled people that have trained, you know, electricians and plumbers and pipe fitters and, you know, highly technical, highly math skills and trades that love it and do a great job and have turned out craftsmen and women that have remarkable talents for decades, over 100 years around here. And those folks would love to be part of this if we could figure out a way to make that work. So we'd love to be part of that conversation.
Okay. Thanks. Rep. Gallegos, you were here on time, so you can ask your question. Rep. Greenlink, you can go a little bit later.
Can I come back in a bit?
Matt, if you want to ask that question.
I'll be short. Thank you for this presentation. I'm very much looking forward to it. I had the privilege of touring Hill High's tech program a couple of weeks ago. Just tremendously, tremendously impressed. And I realized that when I went to high school, shop was for people like me who were supposedly going to college. And it's so totally different now. And the thing that I was most impressed with, though, besides the students, the young people that were involved in these programs, and as you know, Hill High has a robotics program and a number of other sort of technical programs that were just very exciting to see, but what struck me was the need for resources, the kind of resources that these new shop programs require. And again, resources translates into cost. And my assumption is, in your presentation, is that we're really just getting started. I mean, I'd love to see more access for students. As I look at this now, even in the Hillsborough School District, we've got Hill High, but then on the other end, we've got North Plains that doesn't really have anything like this. And so how do we get equal opportunity for our students and create access across the state? I mean, that would be, I assume, the dream, the eventual goal. I did also want to comment, too, that in talking with the instructor there, a couple of things. One, he was responsible for personally generating a lot of support for that program, financial support. But he's also getting ready to retire, and he's very concerned about replacement. So that is a major issue. But thank you very much for the presentation.
Greenlee?
Yes, I'd like to follow on a question in this line. Are the state universities producing what used to be called industrial arts teachers? I mean, they had stopped, I know. Are they?
I'll take that one, Chair Harker and Representative Greenlee. The answer to that is no. Pretty much the primary producer of a career in technical education teacher would be Oregon State Department of Agriculture. And they also have a double degree program. But that's been one of the challenges, even what used to be home economics or consumer and family resources, that's no longer offered either. So it creates a real challenge for us to find people who not only have the pedagogy, the instructional background, but also the business and industry experience.
If we ever get somebody from the heck up here, we can check and see. That's something that's on my mind.
So, Representative Harker, if I may, I wanted to share a couple more things, if it
please.
Would be okay.
Yes, please.
I mentioned that we visited all of the schools, and I wanted to share with you in Pendleton, they're building a house. They have a construction program. Hermiston, I'm sorry. They have 33 lots. So that they can actually, that the school district owns, so that they can actually build over time. We did a grant to Rainier, my southern stuff is coming out here. And they have the largest school campus anywhere in the state, and they are now having a forestry and natural resources program from this. So there's a lot of really good work going on. We are going to convene a group of the grantees and those who would like to be applying for grants in the fall. We would welcome any of you to join us, and we're going to talk about their success, some of the challenges that they've had, and any thoughts they have about how they can share information in the future, best practices. We're also convening a group this summer to talk a little bit about what would regional centers look like. What if we really wanted to do that? What kind of criteria should we be looking at? Is Oregon ready for that? And what kind of funding would it take if we really wanted to do that? So it's a group of practitioners who are going to be joining us to just have that conversation to see where it takes us. And the other thing I wanted to share with you is I have a tiny, less than a minute video, Zoe, if you would help us, that came from a student out in Eastern Oregon, and she just stood outside the school and shared with us her experience as a part of the robotics sprint. The wind is blowing, and it's just a cell phone video. It's not something done in a lab. But I wanted to show it to you, and I would encourage you to look for her engagement, her connections to her family, and her vision for her future. And it's a very short little video.
Okay, one sec. We do have a question here from
I'd like you, Director, use that as your last thing, because I'm going to thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure. Again, I'm all for this program. It costs us a lot of money to build these facilities.
Right.
We have a great history of working community colleges and high schools together. We've just built an unbelievable high school in Redmond Ridgeview. They were hoping to work with COCC to help COCC students come there. And, Director, I hope that the Department of Education is going to monitor what we're doing, how we're spending money. We don't want something sitting there, a building, not being used to help employ people and help our students. And that's so now look, end on a good thing.
Okay, Representative Harker, listen, I can assure you we share your concern. And the community colleges, they are required to have a post-secondary partner if they receive an award. So that is sometimes challenging because of the nature of high school programs, but they do have secondary partners and are required to show us where this program could lead. The issue of facilities is a legitimate and a big question and a concern.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, this is just a student. You'll hear the wind in the background and the other high school students, but I just wanted to show it to you because this is what we see when we go out to visit high
school. So from this robotics class that I've been taking, I've learned lots of different things, from how to program things for a greenhouse or a fire alarm system to playing with little Lego robots. And though it has been extremely fun, it's also been very educational, at least I feel, to me. My brother is in the Air Force, and he's going to a college called Embry-Riddle, and that's where I hope to go, too. I hope to join the Air Force. And in his engineering area of it, he worked with the same Lego robots that I was doing. So while doing this class, I was also able to communicate with him and compare what we were learning. And I think it's incredible that I get the same opportunity here in high school that he is getting in college. And I also think that since I'm going into the same major he is, it's going to be great for preparing me for my future, learning how to program these robots and greenhouses, and from there learn how to program, say, airplanes or different technological things when it comes to the Air Force. So I think this program has been incredible, and I know that I'm not the only one who has benefited from it. Thank you.
So with that in mind, Representative Harker, are there any other questions from the panel? I'm happy to try to address them.
Okay, I have one, and I'm not sure, maybe for each of you to take a whack at. John, you raised the question of tracking system, which is metrics, right? And what you study is what you measure is what you study and what you focus on and helps you adjust these programs. So what metrics do we have in place to look at the kids going into the programs, kids graduating from the programs, kids going from the programs into the trades organizations, et cetera? What is set up, what is not yet set up that we maybe ought to work on?
I bet you'd like for me to answer that one. Chair Harker and members of the committee, we do have a data system in the Department of Education that tracks students that are enrolled in career and technical education. We can follow them from high school to the community college. We cannot, through our data system, follow them into the workforce. And that's because we don't collect Social Security numbers, mm-hmm. and you have to manage mm-hmm. data. We are also, some of these programs, the original data system that we have is primarily for federally funded programs because that was a requirement. So we are collecting SSID or student identifier numbers from these programs so that we can track, identify students as they move through. Will not tell us probably how many go into the trades, unfortunately. We also have a record of programs and how long they've been in place and how many courses they offer, their connections to the community college, and any articulated credits that they identify that should be transferable to a community college program. that's the extent of the data that we have at this time. We are certainly discussing long-term what we would need, and I know that there's great hope for the longitudinal data system and that there might be some alternative methods to be able to follow progress from high school into employment. But right now, we're not in a position to do that because we don't have the Social Security numbers to make the match with the Department of Employment.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the outcomes of not having Social Security numbers collected by high schools.
Right. And there are certainly good reasons for doing that,
but
the assignment of another unique identifier that could hopefully be shared post-graduation would serve that purpose.
But we do know that about 55% of our students go on to post-secondary education, and I think that's, of the CTE students that show up in our database, about 55% go on to community colleges
mm-hmm.
or universities.
Okay.
So we are able to follow them that far.
Yeah. Right. Complete answer?
I think so,
okay.
Chair Harker. The one thing I might add is that all of our apprenticeship programs give extra points for work-related experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been through Oregon Tradeswomen or Portland Youth Builders or Job Corps or the military, certainly, if you're
mm-hmm.
a veteran, you get extra points. And my guess is, as these programs come online, if you show that you've been through one of these CTE programs, you're going to get extra points towards entry. That's not an exact tracking system, but
right.
they would list that on their application, and we could track those numbers of how many people that enter into the trades have been
mm-hmm.
through a program.
I think that'd be really valuable over time because, as Rep. Wilson has pointed out, these are expensive programs. We're putting money into them in hopes of providing the staff for projects such as the ones that your trades are involved in, and it would be really helpful for us for future bodies here making these decisions to know that what we think is helping actually is or is not helping. Yes.
Just one quick suggestion / request. I love the idea that you're going to convene the grantees and other interested applicants, and I would love to certainly be invited and hopefully try to attend that. And if I could just suggest that a lot of times I've attended a lot of meetings like that where often the only discussion is about the good things that happened, and it's great, and that's an important thing to share best practices, and I would just strongly urge you to have a time to talk about challenges too, whether it is for the grantees or the people who have put in applications and not gotten it or are still thinking about it, just to make sure that there's a balanced conversation about what's working and what challenges are we having, because if you don't talk about the challenges you're having, then you can't come up with ideas on how to fix them or avoid them the next time.
Thank you. We'll be happy to do that.
Thanks.
Sounds like you just got an invitation.
Yeah.
Wrangled one there.
Oh, yeah. No problem. We're happy to have any of you.
Comment about it.
Yes?
Yeah. Are we about done?
I think we are. Comment from Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
First of all, ready for anything.
I just wanted to ask, mm-hmm. why won't you let Mr. Hagedorn have a seat in our committee? I think he should be honored to sit, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure he's welcome. There are empty seats here. You feel free.
My comment is to Mr. Mullis, who normally I have a great deal of respect for, and his testimony. But today he said that he didn't have the patience to teach in these areas that we're discussing, and yet he keeps coming
here.
Back here. So that's all I got to say.
Okay. Any other comments, informative or otherwise? No? Okay. Thank you both very much for the update, presentation. So no one else is here to speak on this. We'll close the informational hearing on the CTE grant program and open an informational hearing on college credit for military training. We have several people to testify here today. We've got some panels here. Could we have, please, first of all, Joe Holliday, Banks Blair, and Gus Bedwell come up, please? Introduce yourself. John,
do you want to kind of set it up?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
All right.
I didn't want to put you on the spot.
No, that's fine. I wanted to do an informational hearing as a follow-up on Senate Bill 275 that we passed in the 2011 regular session, big session, and find out kind of how it's working in the real world. Talked to a veteran in the Dalles the other day, and he had approached the community college to see, you know, how many credit hours he might be able to get, and he ended up walking away with one credit for PT. And so it got me really thinking about how this is really playing out in the real world. When, first of all, to make sure that veterans are being advised of the opportunity at every level, whether it's the county VSO or contact with anybody else, like no wrong door. You know, they get the information from anybody and everybody. And then how does it play out for them, and why does a veteran get one credit? You know, that was not the intent of the bill. But I got to thinking about the challenges, particularly with community colleges, where they don't all have the same courses or degree programs in all 17 community colleges. So maybe this veteran approached a community college that, you know, just didn't have his MOS training and schooling didn't match up with his degree program, and so therefore the community college couldn't. I'm not sure, and that's what I want to get to the bottom of, because I think the intent of Senate Bill 275 is to really get into the 40-40-20, the middle 40 in particular, and take some of these folks that taxpayers have paid to put through training and schooling, get it accredited so that they can actually have a jump start on a degree program. So that was the purpose of the informational hearing, to find out how we're doing, if at every level veterans are running into advisors that are really directing them, how successful is it, and if we have numbers to share about President Truesdale, if you're prepared with numbers about how many veterans have actually been given credit, you know, that'd be awesome.
Great. Good morning, Chair Harker, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Holliday. For three more days, I get to serve as the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Student Success Initiatives in the Oregon University System. It's my pleasure to be here to contribute to the information hearing. And this is the university panel, we'll move to the community colleges shortly, I assume. And so this is my last chance to throw my community college partners under the bus. I really appreciate that opportunity. But I will be brief, and I know that you are focused on this, and I understand the concerns, Rep. Huffman, very, very much. What I will say for the universities, briefly, is that all of the public universities, all seven of them, follow the American Council of Education's guide to the evaluation of educational experiences in the armed forces, which we generally call the ACE guide. And within those guidelines, the universities have different policies and practices, but all of them, and this is really to your point, Rep. Huffman, the credits that are awarded for military training or experience or education need to be meeting and clearing, so to speak, and registrar speak, degree requirements, so that it is really case by case. And the reason I point that out, our financial aid directors asked me to make this point, that there actually is not much value to giving students credit if it's not going to count towards their degree, and actually it might be to their detriment, because they might run in extreme cases, they'll run into federal financial aid eligibility limits, and they'll lose federal financial aid eligibility when they reach 150% of the credits. In other words, on their transcript shows that they've earned 150% of the credits, 270 credits for a 180 degree program. So that's just a caveat. But that said, there is robust activity at all the universities in evaluating military experience and training. We were just talking in the hallway about what does it really mean to be a military-friendly campus and how do you evaluate that. Our colleagues at Portland State University shared with me in preparation for this hearing that this year 167 students coming out of the military came into the university, and each of them earned an average of 33 credits towards their degree. And that's two quarters. So there is robust activity. We also have what I believe is a model program at Oregon State University, and I'm going to yield the microphone very shortly to my colleagues, one of whom is an academic advisor for the veterans. We also have Associate Provost Dave McDonald here from Western Oregon University in the audience if you wish to know more about that program. But rest assured, there's a lot of activity going on in this area. It's not uniform. It varies by campus, but we're grateful that you're going to listen to the Oregon State great folks because they really have a model program. And I think I'll stop there and pass it on.
Good morning, Chair Harker, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. My name is Gus Bedwell, and I'm the Military and Veterans Resource Coordinator at Oregon State University. My colleague, Banks Blair, who's an academic advisor, Army vet, and is academic advisor for the Natural Resources with the College of Forestry, and I are here today to present to you how OSU helps our student veterans decide whether or not to use their military transcript as part of their education at OSU. You know, it's interesting you talk about gaps, Representative Huffman. As an OSU, or as members of our OSU Veterans Work Group, we, as part of our process laid out in the packets that you guys have, found a gap and addressed it in how we support our students in this area. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that and then open for questions. The gap that we identified was two-part. There was a lack of communication on our process to incoming students, so they didn't know what we did. And then there was a lack of training and communication with academic advisors on what they can do to help the students. So a group of us that were across the university from offices of admissions, academic advising from three or four different colleges, my office, and our VA certifying officials worked together. And through our process of addressing this gap, we created training for academic advisors, which we got to put on three times. One event, we actually did a joint academic advisor training with Lynn Benton Community College and Oregon State University. We developed and launched communication tools that staff and students have access to on our OSU Veterans website, and created the petition form that you actually have in there to where if a student says, well, wait a minute, I know we get this block of credits, but I think that this course that I have applies to this, or this course, military course I have, applies to this particular college course, and here's the documentation to prove that, they can actually do a petition form and go through the process, and if it's awarded, then they can actually get that course identified. It was a big coup, I will say, for us to get the petition form, because we didn't just get it in one college or two colleges. We got it across the university in all of the colleges. And if you're familiar with university systems, sometimes getting consistency in that way is a bit challenging, especially when you have different programs. You know, one of the things I want to say in closing before we open up for questions is one of the factors that helped us guide our training and communication tools was the principles of excellence that's laid out in President Obama's April 27, 2012, Executive Order 13607. If you haven't had a chance, I would check out the Principles of Excellence because it does talk a lot about what we as universities and community colleges and education systems are required to do to help our service members, veterans, and their family members as they're seeking their education. So with that, Banks and I are available for questions if you have any questions or comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, just a quick comment.
Please, start it off.
Thanks for the work in identifying the gap, because that was what I was, well, it was one of my themes that I think people got tired of in the 13 session, was I kept talking about advising, and we needed continuity at every level so that people were getting, veterans in this case, were getting the same advice, whether it's from a VSO or a campus VSO, or, you know, or the community college and university advisors, though maybe not being certified as a VSO, had an understanding of what the potential was for the veteran and being able to plug them into bank and whoever, you know. So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. And it was an effort of our OSU Veterans Work Group. That's one of the things that we like at OSU is that we have staff members and participants across campus, to include students when they're available to participate as well, to drive some of the work that we're doing to help our students.
Okay. Rick Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, Gus. I didn't get your last name. How many staff, what is the size of your office? How many staff people do you have?
So I have one person that works in my office, and that's me, but there are several interns that throughout the year will work with me on different projects. I have a part-time student employee that works with me on some other things and in partnership with two other offices. But I'm also a facilitator for two work groups and an advisory committee that has professional faculty members and staff members throughout the entire university participating.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
How many veterans are attending OSU?
or in the system, the whole system, including OSU Cascade?
So we currently have approximately 1,100 student veterans that are drawing some type of VA education benefit across three campuses. Now, what I will tell you about our student veterans population is that does include our family members who are drawing benefits as well. Right? And so what we do know is, though, is that's only a partial number of what's really on our campus, because you may have veterans or family members of veterans that are on campus that aren't drawing a benefit for some particular reason.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead. Sir, is part of your interns, are they veterans?
I have had a couple of interns that are veterans, yes. And I try to seek interns that are veterans that have some interest in that. But in the last couple of veterans I've had, they've been last interns I've had have been non-veterans, but they have had military members in their family. Or in one case, I have a young lady working for me now that her husband was a veteran in the military and ultimately died in the military.
Thank you.
Let me just a quick one in here. Have the numbers that you just recited to us been changing significantly in the last 5-10 years or however long you've been tracking them?
Yes, they have. In 2008, when we started tracking some of these numbers for purposes to prepare for things that we were mm-hmm. doing, we had less than 400 student veterans across all three campuses. Mm-hmm. And now we have 1,100 plus, and we're still growing. And that doesn't count our ROTC cadets, mm-hmm. and that doesn't count all of our military tuition assistance individuals as well. Another thing to note is that when you look at our overall school population of 28,000 plus mm-hmm. compared to our student population of 1,100, and you look at the growth between those two populations, in 2008 we had less than 2% of the overall student population were student veterans.
Yeah.
This last number total, it was more than 4%.
Mm-hmm.
So we are continually growing.
Okay. Rep. Wilson,
you're thank you. Follow up. Thank you for that information. Thank you for what you're doing. This is very important. I don't think we're doing a good job of employing or getting our vets back. And obviously, based upon the news reports in the last couple of weeks, we're not even looking after their health care. I would encourage you to find some of those 1,100 that could be your interns. I would also encourage you, the committee that you're working with, I'd ask you to reach out to the Oregon Military Department and have them set on that group or something.
Okay.
My point is, you need some help from people that have been in the field mm-hmm. that actually are veterans, and these your committees that are looking and working with the faculty to be sure that they get credit. The faculty members and the deans of the schools give you this school, and thank you for what you're doing.
Mr. Blair, did you want to chime in at this point?
Well, thank you, Chair Harker. I believe there's a fine line between helping get credit for military student veterans and also maintaining the integrity of the degree programs for which we advise. And I think that's where the rub,
mm-hmm.
where the problem lies. Student veterans, they get one credit of physical activity, physical activity credit for their DD-2 when they submit their DD-214.
Mm-hmm.
And as Mr. Holliday and Mr. Bedwell both mentioned, it's on a case-by-case basis. As an academic advisor, when I have a student veteran or even an active duty service member that I'm working with, I always make a point to go through their joint service transcript, their ARCH transcript. And a lot of the times they have lots of great credit, but they don't apply to the natural resources program that mm-hmm. I advise for and that I'm a graduate of. It's difficult. It's a difficult conversation with them, and most times they understand that what they're getting into is not necessarily going to be helped by what they've done, and it's an unfortunate situation, but that's kind of the nature of the beast is what I've found.
Yeah, I think you expressed it well. It is a thing that a subject we have wrestled with in here from the time that 40-40-20 came on the discussion that we've had over the years. One of the things that we have continued to stress is that we want to hit these targets, but not at the sacrifice, not sacrificing the quality of the education that they come out with, right? Because we want to give credit where credit is due, but not where it isn't. And we want folks coming out with certificates or degrees, or whatever, to have the knowledge that's going to help them get forward in life, not just make our numbers for the state, right?
Right. And Chair Harker, I'd like to add that we do, each of the colleges and within OSU has been very, they've all helped chip in and mm-hmm. contribute. And we have a military, I can't remember the exact, petition for military credit course substitution that we have in place that all colleges can use, all the colleges through OSU. I know that we don't get a lot of these. We for example, in the College of Forestry, we use an in-house petition form. Just a couple weeks ago, where I was able to help a senior non-commissioned officer get his public speaking credit, for example, taken care of through working with our head advisor and working with him. He's been a platoon sergeant. He's obviously had to brief upper level, you know, high level officers and whatnot. So the opportunities are there. It's as much on the university as it is on, and he actually initiated the conversation about may I seek credit for these opportunities and these trainings and skills that I have received through the military. Okay. So I think it is a matter of educating, making sure that the university and the community college officials are educated as to the culture and to what they're coming from, and helping them, you know, find a collaborative relationship to seek credit.
Yeah, very good.
So it takes both sides.
Rep. Gallegos.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I the Veterans Benefit played a major part in my funding of my college education, so I deeply appreciate the work you're doing. But, you know, I had a question. I mean, this seems that we're talking about a special population, and we're talking about really a problem that's really a subset of a larger problem, in that, you know, we're dealing with, which is relatively new for me anyway, the whole notion of credit for life experience, or, you know, how do we as a university system or as a community college system adjust to this sort of new way of thinking of affording credits and getting people into our 40-40-20. Like I said, I think it's a larger discussion. But I do think what I'm hearing is, you know, we owe our veterans a particular debt, and so in part we're working to repay that debt with helping them get through. But as I said, I'm just really curious about not just the university level, the community college level, accreditation issues with regard to what we're doing, how this all fits together, let alone our financial aid piece of it. How do we then accommodate the costs involved in this kind of special focus? Anyway, like I said, a larger discussion, but thank you very much for your work.
Yes, Ms. Chair, we're going to have a discussion on this subject from private universities.
Did we reach out to the privates?
No. If I could
make yeah, please.
No, and I appreciate the universities being here too. Senate Bill 275 was actually directed at community colleges, but universities had said it was something they were already doing. We also had the benefit in place of ACE, and President Truesdell at Clackamas had been probably the most familiar person and has been involved in training a lot of other community colleges on how to apply the credit. And to Rep. Gallegos, Ben can shake his head and know that I'm all wet and wrong, but I think there's a large task force and work group working on the credit for prior experience. I don't remember if it's an official task force or not, but it's definitely being addressed.
All right. Just I'd make a comment, Mr. Chair, that I've worked on this. I think transferability of credit and military experience is very important as we try to reach the 40-40-20 and also pay our debt to people who served in uniform. I just think we need to continue to work on this. I think that the University of Maryland leads the nation in giving credit for military experience. I think a lot of the private schools are maybe setting an example for state universities to follow as far as work experience and things to get so we can move people that are interested in getting a degree quickly and quicker and at less cost. So I hope the university system will continue even after Dr. Holliday leaves us the work on this issue. Thank you.
Yeah, good points. There'd be some lessons to learn there.
Okay.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. The next panel, please.
a panel of one. President Truesdell, would you come up and join us?
Can I make a comment?
Of course, go ahead.
As Gus is leaving, I'll say, because Rep. Wisnett kind of brought it up, Gus kind of had a leg up because he was one of our campus veteran services officers that we funded for one biennium, and then OSU actually picked him up to keep him on to do the job, so he kind of had a real leg up on what the needs of veterans were, and he testifies regularly before our Veterans Committee.
Clearly very well informed enough on everything. Okay, please.
Good morning, Chair Harker, Vice Chair Hoffman, Vice Chair Gallegos. Nice to see you. And my own Representative Gilliam, thank you for being here. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joanne Truesdell. I'm president of Clackamas Community College. I appreciate the accolades from Representative Hoffman, but truth be told, I just hire a lot of smart people who know how to get this work done and support them the best I can. Clackamas has been working with veterans in a very concerted way for the last 7 years, and one of those aspects has been the awarding of military credit for prior as recognized through credit for prior learning. And I want to just talk a little bit about two items and then leave it for questions. We have at our campus, we have three different locations. When you come onto our main campus in Oregon City, the visitor's parking lot is by the community center. When you first walk into the community center, that's where Army Strong and our Veterans Center is. And as a result, we've actually increased the number of people who walk in. And last year we saw nearly 7,000 people visit the Veterans Center. Of those, the number of students who actually enrolled and are receiving veterans benefits has grown to 688, and we anticipate by the end of this year we'll be over 1,000, and that's up from 300 when we first began 7 years ago. In awarding military credit, what we have learned is that with the Joint Service Transcript, which now is required for a military, a veteran, to actually submit to us, what we do is we ask them if they want to be evaluated for credit. And if they do, our very first year of tracking, which is this year under this requirement, student averages 34.5 credits. 43% of the credits that we've awarded, which are 7,520 this year, credits that we have awarded, 43% were in lower division collegiate transfer and 57% in career technical education. By the end of this year, we'll have even more data for you, and I'd be happy to follow up if you wish. I think what's important around this is, from the standpoint of a veteran, we have two full-time personnel, and we use federal work studies and also college work study students from our human services program who primarily do their practicum with us. There are about 12 staff members total that help support them. What's important to note is that many of our veterans talk about, and my husband was one of them, and his father, go in, and it's not like you're exactly directed into a career as an enlisted personnel. I mean, it's not like you choose oftentimes. You are directed into what it is you're going to do, perhaps based on a variety of test scores. So when you get out, it's an opportunity at the community college to decide what it is you actually want to do. And when we talk about the veterans being able to actually transcript those credits, we want them to be meaningful to the degree program that they want to have. And that's not a sideways way of saying that it's okay that some lose out. It's what we try to do is make it a very concerted and informed choice about degree program coaching around careers and then which of your military credits apply. On a particular joint service transcript, what will happen is the ACE will either provide actual credit hours and we will look at our course catalog in the registrar's office and then identify which course that matches up with, award the credit as a transfer in. In other instances where ACE has not provided clear direction as to the credit, if it is a program we offer, we do request the department chair and the veteran is interested, we request the department chair evaluate the training that occurred and determine if those meet competencies in any of the courses that we offer, and then award credit accordingly.
Okay, President.
Thank you.
Representative Greenlick has a question or a comment.
I appreciate if you give me an example. I mean, would it be like an airman who became a
I'd be happy
airplane to. Mechanic and now?
But how about I give you this example? We currently this veteran is graduating this spring. I won't use identifiable information, so it'll be he or she. Was an electrician's mate, third class at E4. We have a transcript that identifies things such as basic engineering, common core, electrician's mate apprenticeship, technical training, firemen, those kinds of things which have credit associated with them. Because we do have a fire science program that has wildland fire, some of those were accepted. Because we do have an electronics technician program, some of those courses were accepted and transcripted and incoming. However, the veteran decided to re-career and is in wastewater environmental sciences program.
I might have decided to be a poet or something.
Could have. And in that instance, then, most of these transferred in as electives in the elective module, and then the core in water and environmental sciences, with the exception, I believe, of one course, was then the core that the student needed to take, the veteran needed to take.
Thank you. Thank
yeah, of course.
That's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, please continue.
Thank you. I will say one last on the training for our staff. The Oregon President's Council for Community Colleges, in working with the Community College and Workforce Development Department, 2 years ago we did a comprehensive training at the Student Success Conference. We all acknowledge that we have been turning over staff, and so we've decided to keep that as an annual event at the Student Success Conference so that we can all get annually together and do some training. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Representative Smith Warner.
Can I ask a quick question about your numbers, just because OSU talked about their veterans as a
sure.
percentage of their... so that 680-something, I think it was, so what is that as a percentage of your student population?
We serve 36,000 students total. We have 16,000 in credit degree-seeking, and so 1,000 of those.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for collectively agreeing for the annual ongoing training. We visited about that recently, and mm-hmm. I think that's just so key to keep the program going.
Yes, it is. And there it changes so much year to year from the federal level and what's allowed, what's disallowed, how does it affect a veteran's benefits. And with so many different bills, GI bills, that people can attend under at any given time, it's really difficult for staff to keep up. So it is important. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much, President. Let's see, panel number three. We have Kristen Benson, Jeff DeMott, and Elizabeth Cox Brand. There you go.
Fine.
Welcome. Please introduce yourselves and
good morning, Chair Harker. For the record, Elizabeth Cox Brand. I'm the Director of Research and Communications for the Community Colleges and Workforce Development Department. I'm glad to meet my colleague, Kristen. We've been working on a lot of initiatives together and just now have actually met in person, so this is great. I've been asked to come up and talk a little bit about the data, as everyone's interested in the numbers of students and who we've got, who we're serving in our community colleges. As you may know, we have been in the process of redesigning our data system for almost the last 2 years. It is almost ready for prime time. It will be, the goal is to have it all up and running in the fall. As part of that, our prior system was not historically set to receive information such as the coding that would be necessary for us to track these students, but the new system will be. So we are anxious to hear about that, anxious to get that moving, and I would be very happy to come back and update you with that as we roll it through maybe next fall.
I have a question on that.
Yes, Chair. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mrs. Coxbrand, are you talking about monitoring and computerizing the payment to veterans too?
Chair Harker and Representative Wisnett, no. I'm talking about the student record information that the department collects from all of the community colleges. So that's mm-hmm. just to track the student records.
Follow up or comment, Mr. Chair? For that.
Yes, go ahead.
We've received some concerns in Central Oregon about the payment process. Mm-hmm. Just for your take back to your leadership, that's not happening quick enough. So, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And did you say that you think you'll have the new system online in time to report back mm-hmm. with some data this coming fall?
Yes, Chair Harker. The system is actually processing right now. We're mm-hmm. still testing it to make mm-hmm. sure that everything is hunky-dory mm-hmm. before we actually roll it out. But all the colleges have been uploading their information for mm-hmm. this year, and we'll continue to do so for the next year. And on that point, if I could, mm-hmm. From the prior topic that was being discussed with our colleagues at the Department of Ed, as far as matching to workforce, what happens with the students if they're in, for instance, a Perkins program in K-12, we match that record to the college record, and if we have the Social Security number, then we match with workforce. As part of our new system, another benefit to it is that there will be the function where K-12 districts can upload their student information directly to our system mm-hmm. and receive the college credit information for their students instantly. So as part of that, as we match information with the students, we'll build our file on the student as well. So again, if we have the Social Security number from the college side, we'd be able to track that student into the workforce.
Okay, very good. Would you do me and the committee a favor and keep us up to date on that, and maybe we would call you back
absolutely.
For an update in September or December, correct?
Mm-hmm. All right. Absolutely, I'd
thanks.
Be glad to.
All right, thanks very much.
Good morning, Chair Harker and members of the committee. My name is Kristen Benson, and I am the Interim Manager of Student Records at Portland Community College. With me today is Jeff DeMott from Veteran Services Financial Aid at Portland Community College. We are here to share a basic overview of how a veteran seeks and receives credit for training completed in the service and how they experience that process. Community colleges in Oregon promote the transfer of military credit listed on the Joint Services Transcript via our web pages, via email outreach, and also advising from Veteran Services and Veteran Resource Offices on our campuses. Some colleges evaluate the Joint Services transcripts as soon as it arrives, while others, like PCC, evaluate upon request from the veteran. The community colleges award lower division collegiate credit based upon ACE recommendations. We will also work with the student and academic departments to determine if any career technical credit can be awarded toward the veteran's declared program of study. In most cases, credit is only awarded for courses and training. However, there are times when career technical credit is awarded for a veteran's occupations in the service. In a 2013 survey to veterans at PCC, nearly 73% stated that they had no difficulty transferring credit from prior institutions or from the military. For those who had difficulty, reasons varied from delays in the Joint Services transcript being sent to us, confusion or delays in the process, or frustration with the low amount of applicable military credit to the veteran's chosen program of study.
Quick question. Do you have any idea of the breakdown of, I think there were three categories that you listed there, including among those who were dissatisfied with the process?
I'm not sure if we've got those coded yet. I think the data is pretty new, so I don't think we have kind of those specific responses coded yet to have that percentage.
If you get them, would you let us know?
Mm-hmm.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Harker and members of the committee. My name is Jeff DeMott, and I am the Veteran Services and Financial Aid Coordinator at Portland Community College. The quality of service to veterans is only part of the question. The other half is understanding the relationship between military training and the academic goals being pursued. Most Oregon community colleges try not to transfer credit that have no applicability to the veteran's declared intention, as additional credit does not help the veteran complete their program. One important lesson that was learned from a program at Lane Community College is how infrequently there was a match between a veteran's academic goal at Lane and their military training. Often the only applicable military credit was a PE credit and some lower division credits. Often they are in subjects that are capped with the Associates of Arts Oregon transfer degree. While community colleges do try to award as much credit to the veterans program, in some rare cases a veteran has become frustrated that too many credits are transferred because it eliminates their ability to have GI Bill cover elective credits. This means that they do not have the benefit of exploring college coursework via the elective block.
Mm-hmm. Chair Harker and members of the committee. In summary, the Oregon community colleges are supportive of veterans using their military training to fulfill degree and certificate requirements of their intended program. As with all processes that our students must navigate, we are continually looking for ways to streamline the process of transferring military credit and to providing student support to our veterans through the process.
Very interesting. I was personally unaware of the impact of giving too many credits on future availability of funding. So we've heard this, and heads are nodding behind you as you're saying these things, as they have been all morning. And that's very interesting and a potential real negative impact on some of these students. So thanks for bringing this to our attention. What is the what data do you have on graduation rates of these folks? We know that certificate receipt for these folks, because we know that we've heard several times in this committee that people who transfer out of community colleges into the four-year university systems have a much better graduation rate. Mm-hmm. Do we have data than folks who have just gone straight into the four-year institution? Do we have any data that look at the military folks coming in terms of certificate completion at your institutions or subsequent transfer into university systems?
Chair Harker and members of the committee, no, I don't have that data here. We are working to track that now and building reporting for that, as graduation and transfer mm-hmm. is a very important mm-hmm. initiative, but I do not have that.
What other? Yes, Rep. Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I missed it. Did you have information on how many veterans you're serving, how many are enrolled now, and how many of those then have received credit for prior training and education? And I think President Truesdell said it was roughly 34 credit hours that, on average, that were being accredited. Do you have those numbers for PCC?
Vice Chair Huffman, I think, Jeff, do you have some basic numbers about just veterans being served? And then I can speak to the second part of that question.
Yes, thanks, Chair Harker and Vice Chair Huffman. PCC is currently serving education benefits for about 1,200 veterans and their dependents, and that equates to about 2.5% to 3% of PCC's student population.
Okay. And then Representative Harker, Chair Harker and Vice Chair Huffman, we our work in the midst of trying to get those analytics on combining some of that information with those veterans being served through veteran benefits who's actually seeking credit for their military training and what the average is. So we're working on getting a report up for that.
Thank you.
Representative Smith-Warner.
But just to clarify, as you mentioned in your remarks, you don't automatically seek out the veteran to ask if they want to do this. They need to proactively come to you.
Rep. Smith-Warner and committee members, what some of the community colleges, as soon as they receive that joint services transcript or ArtSmart transcript into their registrar's office, they may go ahead and simply evaluate right off the bat. Because of the volume that we have at Portland Community Colleges, we actually have kind of a request system. So what we do is once that transcript comes in, we let the veteran know that we have the transcript on file and give them the steps to go into the portal and make the request.
Gotcha.
Okay. Chair, may I add to that?
Yes, please.
Chair Harker and members of the committee, to add to that, it is part of the standard intake process for a veteran who's beginning college at PCC to be informed about the process and where to get the transcripts. Great. And then in support of the Executive Order 13607 that was mentioned earlier, we also have an advising workshop model that we are rolling out for all of our new veterans that they will be participating in for information about academic choices and credits.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments for this panel? No? Okay. Thank you all very much for the good work and for updating us on it. Let's see. We have three more people we hope to hear from this morning. Cameron Smith, Eric Belt, and Dave Frey. Pull a fourth chair up there, maybe. Squeeze in.
Good morning, Chair Harker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And in this week after Memorial Day, I want to recognize first the individual service. We have an Army of One on your committee with Representative Huffman, and we have an Air Force Mafia with both Representative Gallegos and then Representative Lisnett as well. And then for those of you that did not get the opportunity to serve, my colleague here, Colonel Frey, is standing by to sign you up for the Oregon National Guard.
I'm ready.
What I find amazing is that I think 5 or 6 years ago, we would not have had the partnerships across the community colleges, the universities, and our veteran services world. And through the relationship building over the last 5 years, significant efforts underway to make sure that that no wrong door approach really comes alive, both when a veteran is coming to a veteran service officer, whether at the federal, state, or county level, that we can refer into the diverse networks across education, employment, healthcare, mental health, housing, and then equally that the partners that we are referring to, that they have an expertise within their core competency for here today, the education and the degree programs, both at the community colleges and universities, but that they also know to refer back to our service officers where it comes to our core competency in terms of those federal benefits that we take power of attorney and help represent our veterans navigating what is a challenging bureaucracy, both on the healthcare side and the disability compensation and pension side. And we cannot say enough, when our CVSOs, whether in Lynn and Benton County, when they can hand off that warm referral to Gus Bedwell to help navigate the equally complex sometimes system within the universities, or whether in Clackamas we have Greg Myers from President Truesdale's campus, powerful advocates that have they don't necessarily do the power of attorney and the claims work that we had under the Campus Veterans Program, but they do navigate that system as a veteran representative on the staff, working with faculty, working with staff, and working with students. And then when they do need that formal claims, refer that back into the county VSO system. So we know that our work is truly about mobilizing those partnerships. If we're going to drive 3 in 10 Oregon veterans access their benefits, it draws down $2.2 billion of resources to Oregon. Almost incomprehensible, but $1.1 billion of that is cold hard cash in terms of disability compensation and pension. So we want to drive that number up, reduce back-end state safety net services, maximize those federal resources, and also it's going to be driving veteran engagement. Who are our veterans? Are they aware of the resources? And are the partners aware of what we're offering? And are we aware of what they're offering? We offer an incredible Veterans Benefit magazine that we reach out to all returning veterans. One major section is on education. And I really say our veteran service officers, they are that technical expert on those federal benefits, and then they are truly an inch deep but a mile wide, making those personal connections and referrals across education, healthcare, employment, and housing. Mm-hmm. and happy to take any questions. And we have our administrator of our Veterans Services Division that leads our training effort for county VSOs, and then also the National Guard.
Okay. I know the Representative Huffman has a question or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Cameron, do you feel that is it a part of the VSO training, the aspect of what we've been talking about today for returning veterans to be able to get potential credit for their schooling and training?
So, Chair Harker, Representative Huffman, I don't want to overstate the depth of that training, specifically on education. The major focus is on those federal rules, laws, and statutes on the benefit side. But whether it's on suicide prevention, whether it's on veterans' preference on employment, there's a number of areas that we're able to not go as far in depth as we would want, but that it is that awareness that they know it's out there and be able to make those connections to the campuses when they need to.
Okay.
I have, oh, yes.
Are you going to do the whole panel, or you want to...
Is the rest of the panel going to speak?
I believe they are.
I'll wait, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
Okay, then. Please take it away.
Okay.
Grab one of those mics, yeah.
Chair Harker, representative of the committee, Mr. I'm Dave Foray, Military Department Deputy Director. With me today is Chief Warrant Officer for Diane Beach. She's the Army National Guard Education Officer. We also have Air Education Officers at the air bases, Klamath Falls and Portland. Today, we'd like to provide you an overview of the various methods we use to inform the almost 9,000 National Guard members in the state of Oregon their opportunity to receive college credit for their experience in the military. And I believe you have a military department handout in front of you. So the first item in the handout, the Sentinel, very important document. I think some of you may receive the document. It's a copy of the spring edition, and it has two articles in it on getting how to obtain college credit for military training. The first one's on page 8 in the Sentinel, and that's also posted on our blog. And the second article is on page 15 towards the end of the Sentinel. The Sentinel has a circulation of over 14,000 Oregonians and some people in Southwest Washington. Every member of the National Guard and most retirees receive a copy of the Sentinel. So this is one method we use to express this opportunity. We often find that, in my case, the family members and the friends of the National Guard members will read this in detail, and then they'll be asking their spouse, how come you didn't sign up for college credit, that type of thing. So we often get calls from the family members, the spouses frequently, with more questions on how to get college credit for their service member. We also publish an additional 500 copies of the Sentinel that we distribute to interested people and businesses that want to know about our activities in the National Guard. The second item in your handout, the Joint Services Transcript. We send to all of our facilities in Oregon. We have approximately 500 buildings in Oregon. We're in about 40 communities in Oregon. This document's located in each one of the communities where we have a facility. And it's also distributed to the community colleges to hand out to students. As you know, the Joint Services Transcript is the official transcript tool that's used by our personnel to show evidence of their school, of their training, their education, and their background in the military. The next item in the packet are a couple of stapled together newsletters here. These are examples of monthly newsletters that Chief Beach sends each month to our National Guard units, and they often put that in the unit newsletter that the National Guard members receive before they come to drill on drill weekend. In almost every one of these newsletters, there's a link to the Joint Services Transition website. The December 2013 letter, which you have there, has a link to the Joint Services Transcript, and the April 2014 copy you have has an article on the Joint Services Transcript and how to obtain college credit. The education officers, such as Chief Beach, are frequently contacted by military members seeking advice on an education plan or how to obtain financial benefit. In those instances, they speak one-on-one with the service members that come in, often before they even go to the schools seeking entry. So the last item in your handout, copy of our Facebook page from March 2010, and it shows an article on how to obtain college credit for your military education. At the bottom of it, it shows 788 individuals from our organization have reviewed that and have obtained information through the use of our Facebook site. So this is an ongoing process in the National Guard. We do it on a continual basis. So in summary, we use a wide variety of methods to ensure that our service members are aware that they can receive college credit from the quarterly Sentinel newsletter, the monthly education newsletter that Chief Beach sends out, the Joint Services transcript that's distributed, the meetings with the education officers, and we post the information on Facebook and our blog. And that concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Committee?
I'll just say that sounds pretty robust to me. Sounds good. Good. Thanks for making the effort. Who's next?
Just answer a question.
Okay. Representative.
Thank you, Mr.
Counting on you for a question here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Colonel, thank you for your presentation. And Director Smith, thank you for your Marine Corps service. A couple of questions for Director Smith, if I could.
Of course, go ahead.
When I first came here, one of the big issues we had in the county was staffing of the Veterans Service Office. Are we adequate? Do you need more? Are you going to ask for more money for staffing those offices, Director?
Chair Harker, Representative Wishnet, right now I view that campus, or sorry, the County Veterans Service Office function, those are our boots on the ground, our regional network of those experts navigating the system for our veterans. In about 2005, we had a significant infusion of $3.5 million of general fund flowing from the state down to the county level. Right now, about 54% of our state general fund goes down to the local level, with also significant funding coming from the counties themselves. We are serving four generations of veterans across five major wars, which seems unprecedented in our state and nation's history, from World War II, Korea. We are focusing most often on our 9/11, post-9/11, most recent veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, but they're only 6% of our population. Vietnam veterans are 37%, with significant challenges, just like all of our citizens as they age. And it is a two-pronged mission for our county veteran service officers, both riding a desk, taking those power of attorney, and submitting very legal claims to get those benefits and get health care access for our veterans. But then we also ask them to be the belly button and center of gravity in their community, just like on the navigator model that we hear in healthcare. We ask them to be that center of gravity connecting to the diverse resources like education. That is a two-pronged mission that I don't know that we've ever fully funded. And in our perspective, no better return on investment given, we can break it out by district and by county. In some of our larger counties, this is over $100 million a year flowing in terms of federal, just disability and compensation benefits, not even talking about the GI Bill, the health care, the voc rehab, and the other resources. Even in a more rural county like Coos County, $33 million a year flowing into that economy of cold, hard cash. But then also, it's one piece of the puzzle for our veterans thriving in Oregon, getting that disability compensation and low-income pensions. So I think there is robust opportunity, both at the county funding level and at the state level, for further conversations as we move towards the governor's budget in 15-17.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for those comments, in case the committee didn't know, and that is the money going out there, and that's why I think that we need to continue to look at that and hope that Veterans Affairs, your agency, will come forth and ask for more assistance if you need it to disperse that money in a timely manner. You brought up health care. Are your veteran services officers getting complaints of our veterans not being seen in VA hospitals in Oregon? Do you have a report on that? Is the governor looking into this to be sure that Oregon doesn't enter the list of VA hospitals that are not treating our veterans in a timely, professional manner that we've heard?
Mr. Harker, Representative Wisnett, members of the committee, the way I would classify it is access is always an issue, whether it's on wait lists, time for appointments. Given our breadth of our state, we have the Portland VA Medical Center, Roseburg Medical Center. We pull folks into Walla Walla and Boise Medical Centers as well. Just the transportation alone makes access an issue. And then we also have to remember that not every veteran is eligible for VA health care, so that in itself is also an access issue. Fortunately, we haven't had anything corrupt rise up, but it is an overburdened system. The federal VA is a tremendous partner, both on those benefits and health care, but it is also a massive bureaucracy, both to navigate and to shift culturally. So I think you will always see that tension between veterans receiving that care within the VA medical system, and they've pushed out a number of clinics across Oregon to get that primary care into the community. But we also see that veterans want to receive that care also in their community, which is not surprising. And that balance, I think, will be the conversation that runs over the next 20 years. But there are some passionate veterans. Once you get access to the system, it is excellent care, top-notch care by any measure. But sometimes getting that access is the challenge.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative. I would like to keep the questions and the discussion focused on the educational aspect of what these fine folks
are doing. Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, and I'm not trying, but we do have the director here, and this is all over the front page of the news.
Understood.
And I think the director gave me an answer, and I just wanted to summarize it, that the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Governor's Office then are confident that we're not going to have a list, or some of our veterans are not going to speak up, that they're not getting, that they've been put on a list and not treated until some tragedy happens. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Understood. Thank you. Other questions or comments for this panel? Rep. Gilliam, please.
I have a quick comment, Mr. Chair. First of all, I very much appreciate you making this part of our agenda today. And
Rep. Huffman, Vice Chair Huffman, I think deserves a lot of the credit for this, and Victoria for helping
all right.
to set this
Rep.
up.
I'd like to thank them as well, particularly you, Representative. And I appreciate the respect that the director showed for those of us up here that served, and there's a whole lot of folks in this room that have served. I think it's that respect. I learned something about my colleague here to my right, Representative Gallegos, that I didn't know. I didn't know he'd served. We exchanged a couple of notes about that. The point is, I think, for me, is that the respect that's been shown today, this is a difficult subject. Mm-hmm. I don't think you'll find, I'd be surprised if you'd find a veteran in the state of Oregon who said, I serve, therefore hand me my diploma. But the difficulty of figuring all that out, I think we got into the weeds a little bit, and I actually appreciated that. I appreciated my president, President Truesdale, and I also appreciated Mr. Blair. I think he's already gone. There's specific comments about how hard it is to work through this and some of those issues. And all I'm saying, I guess, really is thank you all for what you're doing, both from the standpoint of the military department and the Veterans Affairs, but also from our institutions. I think it's a funny thing I mentioned to Representative Wisnett that there are, coming from a liberal arts private college background, the parallels of having served in the armed forces and life experience, and then coming at it from a liberal arts. How do you put a value on that? And yet we need to continue to wrestle with that, and I think we are. I'd be interested in another time, as you mentioned earlier, of having the private colleges in our state comment on this in some of their programs. Merrillhurst, obviously, is the most famous that comes to for life experience comes to mind. All those issues to say that I just feel that the key here is the respect for those that have served and the sensitivity to their issues. When you bring up the issue of, others have touched on this, of the high record, high number of suicides from folks that have served, those are the kind of sensitivity I think we need to focus on when we're working with this population. I'm not talking about giving out degrees for things that haven't been earned, but a special sensitivity and respect for those that have served and what they're going through, and integrating them into whether it's our community colleges or our four-year institutions. So thank you for letting me comment, and I very much appreciated the discussion today.
I think they're excellent comments, and thanks for chiming in. A couple of things. With respect to the absence of the private universities here, while the others deserve credit for what has happened, I'll assume responsibility for what didn't happen. Mea culpa. It's a sin of omission. It was certainly nothing done intentionally, and I would like to hear from them at some point in the future. And then with regards to the delicacy of the conversation and the respect, I think that has been in this room and in other conversations about this, I, too, really appreciate it. And as someone who was
in Ann Arbor, Michigan in 1970 and went through that institution at a time where there was tremendous turmoil in the country and that institution. I feel very fortunate that we have come to the point where we have conversations like this instead of what was happening then. I'm really interested, expanding on that just a little bit, so I think it was you, sir, that said in the last 5 or 6 years we've seen a greater degree of coordination across, and maybe it wasn't you, I'm sorry, but 5 or 6 years we've had greater communication around these issues across the military, the community college, the Department of Education. Is that, I'm not trying to give the Higher Education Committee credit for it, but it is during that time that we started having, again, a real committee on higher education. And has this been, we had the Senate bill that was referred to earlier that was the genesis of this particular meeting, but I feel that there is generally higher degree of attention and focused conversation and discussion and planning around the supporting of higher education in this state now than there was 10 years ago. Do we do an adequate job of funding and delivering higher education in the state? Not yet. You know, we do the best we can. But as the committees get named in the upcoming session, I won't be here, but I would think that continuing this committee would be a fine and beneficial idea. Comments on that or any of those thoughts? None. Yes, okay. At least one.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I think it's very beneficial to continue this committee, and I'll have that conversation with the speaker. You know, I think it provides a direct venue and format for Director Cannon and others to, as they're doing a vast amount of work. Their plate was really loaded up between 13 and 14 sessions. And so there's going to be a lot of reporting back that we're going to want to hear. And I think this is a great place to be able to do that. And I just want to quickly say a big thanks to all of you. I know it was a tremendous amount of work preparing for the hearing today, gathering up all of the data, and it's very much appreciated. And I'm very pleased with what I've heard and the direction that we're headed in providing college credit to veterans. And just appreciate the work and ask and encourage you to just continue the good work. Thank you.
And thank you for helping make this happen, Rep. Huffman. Rep. Greenlee.
Representative Harker, I'd like to make a comment, I think, where you were going, not in relation to this committee, but in relation to our nation's view of veterans. Mm. I'm old enough to remember the way the nation welcomed World War II veterans. I was pretty young, but I remember all about housing and GI Bill, and the whole transformation of our country was really in relation to it. And I'm old enough to have lived at the University of Michigan a little before you, when the Korean veterans were almost ignored and the Vietnam veterans were reviled in many ways. And what I've been observing in this building is, and I've been here now 12 years, have been the enormous change in the way we officially care about veterans and receive them in ways where we worry about the suicide rate, we worry about resources, we worry about the VA healthcare system. But there's just this enormous change over the last decade in the whole question of we really give a damn about our veterans, and that's an important fact. I mean, this committee has been one of the facilities. I mean, we've figure it out in this institution, but the healthcare committee has been involved, the higher ed committee has been involved, the veteran affairs committee has been involved, and it's been sort of amazing to watch. And we have a lot of work to do, and we need to be prepared for it in this building and everywhere else. But perhaps you guys are all too young to remember the big change is now over. I'm talking about over almost 70 years it's been.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Yes, Representative Gallegos.
If you're done, I don't know.
I am, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You're almost old enough to remember.
Almost, not quite, almost. I just want to say, no, of course, I think this committee is very critical, and I hope to see it continue. We've spent at least my short time here on this committee focusing a lot on higher education, university, community college. I'd like to see us look at the other side, the workforce development piece, and make sure that we've connected these two. And that certainly speaks to really honoring the training that veterans get in the service and making sure that they have a place in the workplace. Again, my previous comment or observation about how this is a subset of a larger issue was certainly answered, I think, by a number of the presentations around, you know, the ACE and how we're looking at, you know, the comparability of this population with other transfer populations and so on. So I think, you know, that's something we still need to continue to look at and work out the bugs. But I also was thinking, coming from a private university, I was thinking how I always, as a professor, I always appreciated the community college students because they were older. And my traditional students never asked questions. They just sat there and took notes and never said anything. But community college students would always challenge the professors, and I love that. They're much more worldly. And I anticipate that's the same kind of data that you'll be developing with regard to veterans who have some more world experience and are taking that into their learning process. So I think this committee has a lot more work to do, and especially if we keep the priority on higher education and on schools for this state. So thank you very much for your work.
Anything else? Anything else from you fine folks before we head out? No?
Chair Harker, members of the committee, now that Colonel Frey knows that Representative Gallegos was in the Oregon National Guard, you can expect him...
Air Guard.
You can expect him to buttonhole you on their budget.
That's fine. That's great.
One final thing. Rep. Johnson did say aloha this morning and wanted me to pass that along.
Okay.
Aww. Yeah.
All right. Very
tough.
Good.
Never liked it.
Let me close the informational hearing on financial aid work group. That's not right. On college credit for military training. And what else do we have for the good of the order before we adjourn? Anything else?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Will there be some legislative concepts that might come before the deadline for asking for them will be right after the September meeting? And
that's true.
There'll be some things involved. So if there are some things you would like our comments on and LCs coming through before the September meeting, that would be.
Okay, very good question. And related to that, I would also like input from all of you on what you would like to see move forward, okay? And we can help tee this up. I, of course, will not be here, as stated before. Rep. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To answer the good representative's question, there was a bill passed in 2014 that asked all state agencies, we passed a lot of bills in 11 and 13, to get military people licensed, and this is sort of what we had heard today is related to that, but each of the agencies is supposed to be coming in and reporting to us on their success and problems, roadblocks, to like a military truck driver getting a license, a firefighter, and things like that. So there was a bill passed, and all the agencies are supposed to be coming in. I'm not sure, they'll probably be Veterans Affairs, because it was Brad Whitten and I that signed the bill, asking that report come back in. Or what's their successes, what are the roadblocks, what do we need other legislation to help expedite getting certification and get them in a job that they could qualify for, veterans. So.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chair, I may be also asking about something, a follow-up on the Rooney Rule.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be great if we could save a brief time in the September hearing for finding out how it's going.
I think there's something going on the Senate side about that, but I'm not certain, and we can certainly follow up on that. And it occurs to me, why don't we send out an email
on the subjects that we have in mind for the upcoming meetings following that conversation that you and I had with the speaker.
Okay.
Can you take care of that? Or you want? Okay.
Very good. And Mr. Chair, how,
yes, sir.
The bill you and I signed, too, and then Dembro.
Yes, and I think that was one of the ones that we have talked about trying to get. We're trying to get an update on some of these things that we've asked folks to work on. So I'm trying to get that done.
Mr. Cannon could address, because there's work groups on that, the bills that we passed about reporting back to us on how to bring costs down and things like that.
Okay. All set? Very good. Thank you all very much, and all of you out there as well. The meeting's now adjourned.